formation. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Texas is back. The kicker comes through.
We're back. Hello and welcome to another brand new episode of Fire Tom Herman, your overreactionary Texas Longhorns football fan podcast. As usual, I am Josh and I'm joined by my co-host Noah, and we are recording tonight's episode on Tuesday at 8:34 p.m.
And OU still sucks.
So we're talking all about those disgusting Sooners, their pretender defense, their system QB, and how we're going to break it off in their asses. But first, before we do all that, we got to talk about that West Virginia game this past weekend.
Yeah, so we'll just start with the good, then we'll get to the bad and the ugly. And you want to start off with what you thought was good first?
Yeah, I mean, for all the sort of issues that the secondary has had and had in this game even, we actually did force quite a few turnovers. A lot of that can be blamed on Austin Kendall, but Deshaun Jameson alone had one of the craziest interceptions. It was like the inverse of what OBJ did for the Giants a few years ago. Just that one-handed interception was absolutely ridiculous. I think it was number one on SportsCenter. Just leapt up and just took the ball away.
Yeah, that was insane.
I couldn't believe that watching it. I mean, I didn't get to see it live, so I didn't get to sort of freak out. I had heard about it before I saw it, but I mean, that was just one of the more impressive displays of just ridiculous athleticism that I've seen out of a Texas player in quite a while, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that play was so good that everybody's talking about how good it is, and I still think it's underrated. Like, because it's more than just, like, jumping up and getting a hand on the ball, but just the amount of strength and focus and, like, the combination of those two things it takes to actually intercept it is just incredible. But overall, Jameson had a great game. I thought that it was the best game of any, like, the best cornerback performance we've had this season. I mean, the only other thing in contention was Jalen Green against La Tech, right? I'm not messing that up. Yeah, it was La Tech. Which, I mean, that's kind of sad.
They all blur together after a while, you know?
Yeah, well, I always get them and Tulsa confused. but, yeah, I mean, so low standard here, but definitely I think the best game by a cornerback this season.
Yeah, and it'll be nice. I think he's pretty well solidified himself with this game. And even, I think, just generally being steady with his run support against Oklahoma State, I think this solidifies him as he has to be the other corner when Jalen Green comes back. There's no reason to see Anthony Cook, who I think did better than he has. He had a decent game. But I think this is basically when Jalen Green is back, it's Green and Jameson, and I mean, it's going to be just like those guys in high school at Houston Lamar there. They're going to be locking down both corner spots. The next good thing, I think, is Roschon Johnson. It is crazy how we started the year with him as our emergency third string tailback. Before the end of like the second drive in the first game, he was our backup tailback. He led the team in rushing. He was clearly the best running back on the team against West Virginia.
Yeah, so my heart says Keontae is the better running back, but the film kind of says it's Roschon. I mean, I think that the difference isn't as stark as the stats against West Virginia suggest. I think that Roschon generally had like better blocking, and Ingram had more carries, like where Darius Stills just blew things up inside. But even like setting that aside, Roschon was just clearly better. He had a great game against West Virginia, whereas Keontae was just kind of average. And that might have had to do with the stinger he got early on. But yeah, definitely a breakout performance from Roschon, which, I mean, that's just crazy to say. And we already knew he was good, but he really put it together for like a complete game against West Virginia.
Yeah, more than 100 yards. He was just constantly, seems like he finds the hole. He's constantly falling forward. It's kind of hard to believe that basically in this last cycle for recruiting, we thought we were coming out basically empty as far as running backs are concerned. And it turns out we have Jordan Whittington, who we thought was going to be a slot receiver. And we haven't gotten to see him, but he ended up being our running back take, or ended up being the makeshift running back take. And Roschon Johnson is also doing a great job. Two guys not recruited to be running back, playing running back, sort of filling in that gap in that class. So it's been really nice to see Roschon Johnson just pick it up and just play so naturally for a guy who spent the entire spring trying to be a quarterback. I think the next guy we got to talk about is our second best runner on the day, and that's Sam Cosmi.
Yeah, he had his Peisman moment.
Definitely. He didn't look quite as weird as, like, you see sometimes the offensive lineman will scoop up the ball on a fumble or something, and he'll look like he's carrying a loaf of bread or something. He looked pretty athletic. I mean, yeah, he's a lot larger than an actual running back, but he really didn't look that uncomfortable carrying the ball and lowering the shoulder to get into the end zone.
I think it's pretty telling that the coaches were willing to throw him a screen where he caught it at the 22. And like in the press conferences last week, Herman said that like it lined up where like that was where they wanted to run it in terms of like the hash mark and the side of the field and like down in distance and everything. So they knew that Sam Cosmi was going to be running the ball 22 yards to the end zone. I mean, it's a 12-yard carry, but he got it 12 or 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage, right? And then it's also telling that he actually managed to make it 22 yards without getting tackled. Yeah, it definitely takes some pretty unique athleticism for an offensive lineman.
Yeah, and you know the offensive lineman. He was talking about Derek Kerstetter was jealous of getting to do that. I think our offensive linemen don't have any trouble blocking for the guys that they block for usually, but you know that Braun and Shackelford and everybody could not wait. As soon as that play was called, they could not wait to be the lead blockers for Cosmi on that. It was really awesome, really good to see. I love the sort of creativity. I didn't get to see it live. It's another one because I was at Florida versus Auburn. But I saw that pop up on my phone. I'm like, okay, ESPN must have glitched. How did Sam Cosmi end up with a 12-yard TD run? The only thing I could think of was that Sam had fumbled and he managed to pick it up and find his way into the end zone. But, I mean, that was better than I could have dreamt it up in my head.
Yeah, it was really cool. And it was funny watching Kerstetter try to like lift up Cosmi after the carry, the celebration.
Get him about like 3 inches off the ground. Just yeah. Go, nope,
I mean, Sam's a unit, but he's not quite Cosmi size.
No. But speaking of the other Sam, I thought Sam Ehlinger did a really good job for a game plan where there wasn't a whole lot of design quarterback runs. Really the last touchdown run, that 23-yarder to basically put the game on ice, was the only time where I really remember offhand Sam having a designed run. Everything else was an off-schedule scramble. He had that scramble touchdown that was a pass play the whole way. He stood in the pocket for quite a while. It wasn't one of those situations that you see with a lot of the like mobile freshman quarterbacks where they drop back, first guy's not there, and they take off immediately. He stood in the pocket for 3-4 seconds looking down the field, going through his reads, trying to find someone open before making the decision to step forward and juke a guy out of his shoes.
This is going to sound really weird to say, but I feel like Sam this year is actually living up to like the whole dual threat designation, you know, because typically, like whenever I think of a dual threat quarterback, I'm thinking like Lamar Jackson, RG3, Kyler Murray.
Michael Vick.
Yeah, Michael Vick or even like Casey Thompson or what Rashawn would have been, you know. But Ehlinger is showing a little bit more open field running this year. And I mean, some of that is we're not running as much QB power and stuff, but he's always been more of a bruiser to me. But I've been kind of caught off guard by some of the speed he's shown and some of that ability in open space that we just haven't seen a whole lot up until this year.
With that open space, like you were saying, it's been a lot of QB power, so we're used to seeing Sam just drop the shoulder. But on that scramble touchdown, he did take a step and actually juke a guy. He didn't just run the guy over. And when you pair that sort of awareness as a more of a real runner rather than just a battering ram type runner with his progression as a passer, I agree. He's really developed into where both of these sides are real strengths of his. He can do the open field running. It's not just between the tackles inside the five. And he's shown that his arm is a weapon now. And sort of like showed up Kalavon Chaisson, who was talking about how Sam was more of a threat with his legs before that LSU game. He's got both halves of the dual threat. He's not a dual threat like gets thrown around with just a guy who plays quarterback but isn't really that great a passer and pulls the ball down and runs seemingly every play.
Yep, and okay, so last thing that we're going to touch on the good was I really appreciate our physicality on defense. It was nice to see that carry over from the Oklahoma State game, where you can just tell that we're the more physical unit compared to the offense that we're facing. And I think that's going to be really important moving forward against Oklahoma, you know. But really, like, attacking blockers, the DBs playing aggressively on the outside and coming up and really crashing down hard. But I was
honestly, we're
happy
playing
with
physical
that.
To, like, a fault, I would say, even. Especially, like, in the
case
of
BJ
Foster.
But and maybe Estelle, too, on the that zone read touchdown he gave up. But
hell, even Dicker the kicker was getting a little too physical on his tackles.
All right, I guess that's true, too.
And I think that probably spins us right into the bad. I do want to talk about Dicker the kicker. He had that tackle on on the kickoff return where he was more or less the last line of defense. Went for the tackle. He really dropped his head, which, I mean, I can appreciate the enthusiasm, a kicker not being afraid to go after the ball carrier. But you are the kicker. There's not, like, a ton of depth behind you like most other positions have. For one, we can't have you doing that to possibly get injured. And for two, when you're leading with the crown of the helmet like that, you're bordering on getting called for targeting. I think really that by the book could have been called targeting because of how he led with the crown of his helmet. But it was just that he managed to get run over while he tried to do it. I think the refs were just like, yeah, we can't call targeting on a guy who just got trucked by the ball carrier.
Yeah, I mean, I think that some of it was just poor tackling form. But yeah, he definitely needs to learn to protect himself a little bit.
He is the kicker, though, so I guess I can't be that upset that he doesn't have good tackling form. The other thing was missing the field goal. I know there was some conversation about about it being windy. West Virginia missed the field goal as well. So who knows if Dicker would have had the chance to redeem himself going the other direction. But it's enough to where I have a little bit of pause. Dicker will always be a legend in my mind for last year's Red River Shootout and being just clutch as hell. But there have been enough instances where he's made seemingly low pressure field goals look really difficult, either by them not going in or them just being more borderline. And this is one of those situations. It was in, what was it, the second quarter where he missed that field goal. So there's enough in those intermediate ranges that I'm a little nervous about with him moving forward as just sort of his consistency is concerned. He is still just a sophomore, so it's not the end of the world for him, but it's enough to give me a little bit of pause.
I don't have an issue with Dicker. I mean, he's 4 of 6 on the year, but every single one of those has come from more than 40 yards. So he's hitting 67% on like a small sample size, all over 40 yards. Last year, he was 8 of 13 on field goals over 40 yards. That's 62%. So he's still doing better than last year. But the difference is that last year he had 12 kicks less than 40, you know? And he doesn't have any of those this year. So in an offense like ours, where we're a really good red zone offense, he's not getting short field goals. He's not getting chip shots. We're going for it a lot on fourth down inside the red zone. His field goal percentage is going to be a little bit lower. And I don't think that it's an issue until it happens on like a larger sample size. So, but I mean, if we can get him up to like 75%, 80% from 40 plus, then that's pretty good for college. I mean, even NFL kickers are like, I'm just browsing through some stats, but there's a lot of NFL kickers that are like 2 of 3 on the season from 40 plus yards. And I mean, that's the same percentage here. So I don't really see any reason to panic about Dicker. I think he's fine, but he's being put in a lot of tough spots. And the fact of the matter is, he's like a 19-year-old true sophomore, and that's just going to happen whenever you have a young guy kicking field goals for you.
Yeah, and speaking of things that happen when you've got young players sort of more or less being thrown into the fire, really being asked to execute in some tough situations, Junior Ongalau did not have a great game, and that was less because of him and more because of who he was going up against. I think Darius Stills for West Virginia, the defensive tackle, is going to end up being the single best defensive lineman that we play this entire season. So hopefully this is the floor for this offensive line.
Yeah, I hope that's true.
Yeah, Darius Stills just lived in our
backfield.
I mean,
and it was like Angulo struggled, but so did Kerstetter. Shaq didn't have a great game. The right side of the line just as a whole. Some of it was a scheme issue. Angulo was put in some pretty tough spots where, like, there were a couple times that, so Angulo, the right guard, right? So directly to his left is Shaq, the center. I'm going to try to kind of explain some of this stuff, but I don't know how successful I'll be. doing this in podcast form. But then directly over Shaq, or kind of in between them, is Darius Stills, right? So Stills is on the left, and Anguilao was asked a couple times to reach block, where he's essentially trying to get on the left side of Stills and push him out of that gap to open up space for Ingram to run on that left side, right? And whenever a guy is that powerful, like that strong and that fast, like Stills is, it's just really tough to get on the opposite side of him, you know, to move all the way across his body and lock the guy out. So it was a really hard job. I think that we saw some adjustments as the game went on, and that's kind of when we had more success, is when we were just kind of running it straight forward and not asking him to do that. But yeah, he definitely struggled a lot. And it's something that we hopefully can fix and hopefully won't leave him in as many bad spots moving forward.
Yeah, like you said, there were adjustments. It seemed like in about the fourth quarter, where the offense sort of settled in, really took control, we were able to calm down a lot of those issues going up against Stills for the offensive line. Moving into the ugly, the things that are real bad. I mean, the first one I got listed is Keyonte Ingram. We talked about how some of it might have been because of the stinger, but he really just could not find any space. Like we were talking about with Stills constantly being in the backfield, it seemed like there were a lot of plays where Ingram was getting the ball and things were dead in the water before he even got going. But at a certain point, it's a little bit concerning when you've got Roshan Johnson seems to be finding space and Keyonte Ingram is just simply not able to do it at the same rate in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I didn't think that Keyonte was good. Like, he wasn't a championship-level plus player. But I definitely think that he kind of bore the brunt of Stills' fury on a couple of those plays, especially early on, because that's when we had the least success running the ball, was those first couple possessions, whenever it was Keyonte and not Roshan in the game, you know, before his injury even. So I don't really blame him for everything, because I think he was in a couple bad spots. But at the same time, like, I just think that Roshan was better on the day.
Yeah, I would say just sort of seemed hesitant, seemed unsure of where he was going. I guess it's one of those situations where coaches talk about sort of, he wasn't playing sort of instinctually. He spent a lot of time thinking, and I think that slowed him down a lot. And that may have been the stinger was sort of slowing him down, making him second guess stuff. But it's sort of tough, and it's enough for me to sort of have some larger scale concerns than simply Keyonte. But you saw, once Roshan got in the game, once the run game started to open up, how much the rest of the offense sort of followed with it. So it'll be critical moving forward. If one of those guys gets slowed down, that we're able to find a way to get the other guy going. That way the offense doesn't get hung up for extended periods of time, because that's something that we will pay for in this conference, especially with this upcoming opponent in Oklahoma. So can't afford those slow starts. The other, for me anyway, I'll leave the last one to you. But the next one that we got is Sam's downfield passing. Through an interception, and again, a lot of people want to point to the wind sort of being in his face in that one for why he underthrew it. But the fact of the matter is that pass that he threw that was picked off, he was throwing into triple coverage, basically. There were three guys there who all would have had a better shot at it than our wide receiver.
I can kind of see where Sam was going on that one, because it was like, okay, so Eagles is running the post, and he's a step behind his man, but he's not a step in front. So, like, there's space there, but you have to get it way out in front of him, and that's the type of pass that, like, it just requires a perfect throw 50 yards downfield. You know, that's like an Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes pass, and if it's not perfect, it's going to get picked. So, yeah, this decision was pretty bad, and the throw was even worse. So it's like, I can kind of understand where he's going with it, but I thought that it was definitely reaching, especially since he had his running back wide open in the flat on the play. Because, I mean, you and I talked about it during the preview last week, that West Virginia tends to drop back in coverage, rush only three or four, and just prevent anything deep. And Sam reached a couple times on deep shots to Eagles. And then on that one, they made him pay.
Yeah, definitely. I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of the same from a lot of teams moving forward, where it's going to be a lot of sort of just sitting back and trying to keep our offense in front of them. So it'll be interesting to see how our offense evolves and how Sam's how Sam is wielded by Tim Beck, by Tom Herman, in developing our game plans moving forward. And it's another one where I want to believe coming out of the bye week, there's a little bit of rust to knock off. As much as Herman wants to talk about focusing on the one opponent and everyone's just focused on West Virginia, you know, there was some thought going towards this game, looking ahead to Oklahoma. So hopefully we'll see some of those things just sort of naturally worked out this weekend.
Okay, so last ugly point for the review was basically the way that our defense responded to motion. I noticed, so the first thing was we put our linebackers in coverage, like on the outside, like they would motion the running back out to the very like edge, nearly out of bounds, you know? And like we had Delia Deowe and Juwan Mitchell follow them out there, which is just really, it's just a really bad look. If we do that against OU, we're going to get burned. And then just in general, our defense seems slow to pick up on motion and play like assignment sound football. So their second run of the game, and this sounds weird to say, their second run of the game was at the end of the first quarter. There was like 2 minutes left because they came out throwing the ball a bunch. And they came out in a two-back set, and one of the backs went in motion for a swing pass. And whenever the ball was snapped, Juwan Mitchell like immediately decided to attack the swing pass. So he goes sprinting out of the box, following that running back, coming downhill. And then the other back just takes like a handoff from the running back and has a clear hole in the middle of the field to run for 9 yards. So I will, at least in their defense, say that they did learn. Like, West Virginia tried to run that a couple times later on in the game, and it got shut down. But it was kind of a poor performance in terms of just being able to like decipher and look past like the shiny objects, you know, and really concentrate on what you're supposed to be doing rather than all the distractions that Neil Brown threw at us.
Yeah, I think really, I think if you're going to have to do that with one of those linebackers, I think Juwan Mitchell is far more adept at being able to cover a running back out there on the boundary like we saw. I certainly wouldn't want Delia Deowe out there, but I think Juwan Mitchell is a guy who has actually progressed, has more of that athleticism to be able to pull that off, though he's not going to be able to do that against everyone. I certainly wouldn't want to see it, like you said, against Oklahoma this week, because that would we would be forced to pay for that.
Yeah, I don't want to see it. you know, just switch to zone or send out like switch the assignment so a DB is on him. I just don't think that'll hold up very well.
This episode of the Fire Tom Herman podcast on Hornscast is sponsored by Last Stand Hats, the number one place for real Texas fans to get their game day gear. Last Stand Hats gives Texas fans the opportunity to showcase their burnt orange pride by providing apparel options outside the standard block T and Longhorn logos. If you're looking for more variety in your Longhorn gear, you have to check out laststandhats.com. And if you use the code HORNSCAST10 at checkout, you'll save 10% on your order. So make sure to wear your heart on your head and go to laststandhats.com. Hook 'em. And before we move on to the hot take review here, I just want to go back to the good. I can't believe we left this guy out. Kirk Johnson finally got back on the field. Got, I think it was 4 carries, had a couple pretty good ones where he was showed some burst, was able to get about 6 yards on a couple of those carries. You could tell even just standing out there between plays how excited he was. And it seemed like really just sort of a cathartic thing, I guess, just to be able to see him back out there getting carries for the first time since his freshman year against Texas Tech. I mean, through all the injuries that guy's been through how long he's been on campus, sort of been second fiddle as far as attention to his brother. It was really awesome to see Kirk back out on the field getting carries. Like I said, just a cathartic moment. Really nice.
I'm happy for the guy. I really am. I think that it's awesome that he was able to keep going and finally make it back.
Yeah, and it shows the trust that the coaches have in him and the work that he has put in, even while he was injured. Even in the position we're in, for him to get carries and know Daniel Young, really just happy for Kirk.
Yep.
All right, so for this hot take review, last week your hot take was that Texas would have more points than West Virginia would have rushing yards. I think you were probably expecting a bit more offense out of us. And also you talked about that second run, the holes that were there early for the very small handful of times in West Virginia.
Okay. So what I was expecting is that West Virginia would come out and, I mean, Neil Brown is, he's air raid but he understands the importance of running the ball. He tries to establish it. So I thought they were going to come out and they were just going to be willing to run at us. And I guess I just severely underestimated Neil Brown, which I know I shouldn't have done, because they only threw it. They didn't run the ball a single time on their first three possessions. So that's a textbook case of like using the pass to set up the run. And then by the time they did decide to run it, our linebackers were running all over the place. They were confused by the motion. Yeah, even though they only had 96-yard rushing, which is like a pretty good day as a defense if you hold them to that, you know, they definitely caught me off guard with the way they just approached their offensive game plan.
It's a good thing we aren't coaches, because we would be fooled just about every single game.
I don't think either of us have gotten a hot take right this year.
No, I mean, I've had a few where if I squint just right, it's like, well, I was on the right track. Like for this week, my hot take was Anthony Cook was going to get his first career interception. And I was correct in that someone got their first career interception with Jameson. That ridiculous one-handed grab has to be the best first career interception of anyone's career to come up with that one. And then, of course, he came up with a second one later in the game. So I didn't get the right side of the field, but it was a cornerback. It was a guy who is the same year as Anthony Cook. It was just Anthony Cook's counterpart on the other side of the field getting that first career interception.
Yeah, and you know, I was on the right track too. We only needed 57 more points, and we would have had it. So,
simple as that, real close. Let's go on to who to fire. I guess I'll start on this one. I'm going with Stan Drayton this week, mostly because it seems like we're having an issue where our best running back, both last year and this year, seem to be the players who have had the least face time with Stan Drayton. Like, we had Daniel Young in 2017, and then in 2018, he was behind Trey Watson and Keyonte Ingram, who had never been coached by Stan Drayton, and he looked visibly worse. Toniel Carter looked visibly worse.
Well, Toniel Carter didn't play.
He looked visibly worse in the spring game until he didn't play anymore.
Yeah.
But regardless, the point is the same. Trey Watson comes in. Keyonte Ingram comes in. They are both our two best guys. We get to this week. Keyonte Ingram is the guy who's been in the program the longest. Longer than Roschon Johnson. And Roschon Johnson looks like clearly the best back this week. And then you don't see Daniel Young at all. And obviously, Kirk Johnson is his own special case that I'm not really going to apply this to, but it seems like we're in this weird funk where our best guy is the guy who doesn't know what's going on nearly as much as you would expect everyone else to know what's going on.
Yeah, so, it's definitely one of those things where at this point, the results definitely kind of point to something funky going on. I'm not quite there yet, but I can understand the line of thinking for everybody is kind of on that fire Drayton train.
And it wouldn't surprise me to see that trend continue next year. And part of that's just because of the talent that we're getting in the recruiting class with Bijan Robinson. But it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up being our best running back by like the midpoint of next season over, who knows, maybe it'll be Roschon Johnson will be the incumbent starter by then. It's a weird dynamic that we've got going. And it's enough for me to say Drayton should be the one to go this week.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Anyways, we'll talk more about running backs later. but so Derek Wareham is my pick for who to fire this week. Herb Hand was a close second, but I'm going to give him a pass because he's Herb Hand, and I love everything he's done here. But mainly just because there was the first punt of the game, it downed at like the 9-yard line, or it hit the ground at the 9-yard line, and Jones was close enough to it to catch it, but he didn't field it, and then it got downed at the 1. And it just kind of sticks out because Herman has said that like our returners are coached to field every punt, and Jones hesitated and let the punt go, and I think he's kind of in his own head about it, about the fumble against OSU. So I'm just going to pick Wareham since he's a special teams coach, and just hope that we get our punt return unit kind of sorted out because it's kind of a mess right now.
Yeah, it's hard to believe with that kind of error that you can really look at that and be like, well, it's better than the performance they had in the last game.
Right. Yeah, and then, okay, really quick side note. The West Virginia player had his legs in the end zone, so it should have been a touchback. But the refs called it a, like a down at the one. So I don't know. I didn't like the refereeing.
I can never keep it straight for college in the NFL if it's just where the ball is or if any body part goes in, because I think we're on a different rule set for that. Like, in one of them, body can be in the end zone as long as the ball stays out. And then in the other one, if any part of your body is in the end zone, then the ball counts as being in the end zone. It's all very confusing, and I just chalked it up to me not knowing the rules.
Yeah, I always just see the Gunners throwing the ball back, but maybe it's because they don't want to carry the ball into it. So I don't know. That just kind of was something I noticed, but maybe I'm off base there. It wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah. All right. So pause for ad read. This is where we want the ad tucks, yada, yada, yada.
All right, do you want to rotate on these?
All right, with that. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, do you want to rotate on these?
Yeah, for we'll these do rotate okay. again. All right, and with that, the time has finally come. The hated Sooners, the Red River Shootout in Dallas at the Cotton Bowl is this weekend. If you are not going, I pity your soul. This is probably the most excited I've been for a Red River Shootout. Well, since last year's Red River Shootout, but to have both teams with these expectations, with these high-flying offenses now at this point, I think our offense is still in the top five according to the advanced analytics that Bill Connolly's got going at ESPN. So this is a big one. I there's really, even with this LSU game, every year this Oklahoma game is always going to be the biggest game on our schedule. It doesn't matter who's in the non-conference. It doesn't matter where Oklahoma's even ranked, honestly, as far as I'm concerned. Doesn't matter where we're ranked. This is always the game I'm most excited for.
It's huge. I mean, this is, I don't want to be like alarmist here, but this is kind of like a defining moment for the season. Because the thing with LSU was always, well, if we lose, we can beat OU and we'll be okay. But this one, the team looks good enough to run the table in the second half of the year. So, I mean, it all comes down to this in terms of our playoff positioning, which wasn't the expectation coming into the season, right? But it definitely was a hope. Or a dream.
Yeah, I think
so. I don't want to wake up yet.
Yeah, a lot of us were hoping to see the offense take a step forward. And I think a lot of us, even with our sort of expectation that the offense would improve, are pleasantly surprised by how much better it's gotten. So yeah, there's a lot more riding on this, I think, than we really felt like we would be expecting while talking about it in the preseason. I think we both agreed that losing to LSU was on the table. Felt like coming in here with only one loss was again on the table, and it is something that's just going to define the season. If we win this, it's all about avoiding a letdown to get back and probably have to face them again in December. But I mean, there is no game bigger on this calendar. So let's talk about these injuries that Texas has got to handle. Picked up a few more against West Virginia, but more importantly, we've got some guys coming back. Some of the guys that are coming back, we've got Colin Johnson. He was available against West Virginia, but Tom Herman said it was really only in an emergency role. If it was something with the hands team or other injuries to the wide receiver core, we would have seen Colin Johnson come in. But got him that extra week to really relax on the sideline. He's going to be ready to go. Time to have another big game against Oklahoma. He terrorized that secondary last year, so I expect really big things for him coming back. And making a big impact on this offense. The next one, we talked last week about DeMarvion Overshown definitely being a maybe to play. Ultimately, he didn't see any snaps last week against West Virginia either. But this week, it sounds like, according to Tom Herman during his Monday press conference, he ran really well on the sideline pregame for Saturday against West Virginia. So he's going to be practicing this week. They're kind of easing him in as you do. But I would expect, just given the gravity of this game, cannot emphasize enough how important this game is. I expect DeMarvion Overshown will be available, will be playing, and I hope to see him have a big impact.
He certainly could. And then up next, Cade Brewer, head injury in the last game. It's not a concussion. He's currently practicing, as is Chris Brown, who had a thigh contusion against West Virginia. But both of those guys seem like it's just a short-term thing. They'll both be fine for OU, I think, or they should be.
They should be.
Keontae's in the same boat. Had a little bit of a stinger there, but he'll be back for OU for sure. I mean, he was back for West Virginia, but his running back counterpart and Jordan Whittington seems like he won't. I think he's still listed as a maybe, but at this point, it's looking like this is going to hinder him for a little bit longer than had been originally expected, because it's kind of the time we were expecting him back, but that might not be the case.
Yeah, Tom Herman said it might have been wishful thinking for Whittington to come back. But, I mean, through this offseason, through this recruiting, through Vernon Broughton, through Bijan Robinson, I am now acutely cautious when it comes to feeling like I might be getting bamboozled. That could be the situation here. I want to believe it's the situation here. I really want to be like sitting there on the third drive and go, oh shit, there's number 21. Or that's his number, right? 21, Jordan Whittington, he's here. Like, that's his music. Holy shit, he's on the field. He's playing. I want to believe that door is still open and there's just some gamesmanship going on there. I'm sort of expecting the same out of Lincoln Riley talking about his injuries. So I'm hopeful. I don't expect it, but part of me will be hurt if he's not back.
Milroe, please.
So let's get started sort of talking about what Oklahoma is good at. And this is probably going to be obvious to anyone who watches even the slightest bit of college football at this point. Lincoln Riley, turns out, is pretty okay at coaching an offense. So Oklahoma, shockingly, very good on offense again this year.
Yeah, it's only mildly shocking that Lincoln Riley managed to adapt his offense again to another transfer quarterback and have it humming and firing on all cylinders and having it be the best in the country. It actually is better than I expected it to be. I thought that they were going to be like a top three offense statistically, but not just as insanely efficient as they are. And I think that a lot of that has to do with Jalen Hurts actually stepping up and being better than he was last time he played significant snaps, you know. He really looks like he improved his mechanics in the last year under, I think it was Locksley at Alabama, and then under Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. They both seem to have coached him up, and he's doing a much better job as a passer than he was previously. And, of course, he's a great runner at the quarterback spot.
Yeah, I think that's the most impressive thing, and it just continues, as much as I don't want him to be as good as he is, it just continues to impress me the level of like adaptability and the creativity that Lincoln Riley has with his offense. He's been at Oklahoma now 4 years, 2 years as head coach, or is it 3 years now?
This is his third.
Third year as head coach, had the 2 years with Baker Mayfield, a year with Kyler Murray, this year with Jalen Hurts. And while the heart of the offense is still the same, it still looks very different. I mean, even with the athleticism that Kyler Murray displayed, there was never this much of the quarterback run game built into this offense like there is with Jalen Hurts. I mean, he is quite literally running wild seemingly every week, picking up basically 100 to 200 yards on the ground alone, in addition to the just insane weaponry that he's got on the boundaries, in the slot, with his wide receivers. I mean, it's just a sight to behold. I think Tom Herman said that they're averaging 9.9 yards per play, which is even more insane. I think they were averaging 8 yards per play, and that was leading the nation at this time last year. So it feels like a different offense, and yet the efficiency is even better every single year.
Yeah, now, all that being said, because I mean, I've said before, I think Lincoln Riley is the best offensive mind in football. Jalen Hurts is really good. Their running back's really good. Their receivers are really good. Their offensive line looks to be pretty good. They do have, or I should say there's an important caveat that, I mean, the best defense they've played is, what, Texas Tech? They are good, and there's not going to be such thing as stopping them, but we also don't know what it looks like when they've actually been slowed down. And we are much more athletic on the defensive side of the football than we were last year. And so I think that that's something that can help us at least get some stops. And really, whenever I look at the opportunities that our defense will have to affect the game, I think a lot of it is going to come in the red zone. Because looking at the red zone stats, they have 29 possessions in the red zone to our 18, but only 22 of those have actually become touchdowns. So that's a rate of, I looked it up earlier, but I forgot. It's 76%, which is good. I'm not saying that's bad, but it's not elite. And that's kind of what you expect from a Lincoln Riley offense. And like you compare that to us, we're hitting at 89%, where 16 of our 18 drives have been touchdowns. So that's something that I think that the defense will be able to give up yards, but they really need to buckle down in the red zone and get a couple stops there, because that seems to be something that they aren't like unbeatable. That's where you can actually get them. And, you know, two stops in the red zone, 8-point swing, that could be the difference in the ballgame.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time, and not just us, but, I mean, everyone talks about it all the time, how important that is in this conference with the offenses that you see on a weekly basis. Many times holding someone to a field goal, making them execute in the red zone and forcing them to kick it instead of getting six, that's nearly as good as making a stop or even forcing a turnover at some points, the way these games get played. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Our red zone defense, I think, is where it's going to be the most critical. I have no doubt that Oklahoma is going to move the ball basically at will between the 20s. But once we get inside the 20-yard line, we need to force them and force Jalen Hurts to make plays with the smaller windows and try and force field goals. One of the other things I would say that Oklahoma's bad at, and it goes along with this whole forcing field goals thing, their starting kicker's currently suspended due to some domestic violence stuff. And he really wasn't that great to begin with, I didn't think. He doesn't seem like he had a big leg or anything and seemed pretty shaky when he did kick field goals. He's suspended, so I don't know how much worse the backup is. So that could add a whole nother layer to this red zone defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a couple of missed field goals would be pretty clutch. And then the big question mark, the thing that nobody knows the answer to, is what is OU's defense like? You know, it seems like it's improving. Alex Grinch, the new defensive coordinator, they seem to have some talent in the front seven for the first time. Kenneth Murray, I thought that last year he was just kind of a stat stuffer, but this year it actually does seem like he's actually like putting some substance behind the stats and is improving. I know they have a couple of defensive linemen that seem to be playing well, and Perkins and Gallimore. But it's still just the biggest question. I remember last year people were talking about their defense being improved over the first four games of the season, and then that turned out to very much not be the case. So it's a big question mark. You got any thoughts there, Josh?
Well, I think the thing that I am most expecting out of OU's defense is because of the switch to have Alex Grinch as their defensive coordinator and having a few games to get started, they weren't given the luxury of sort of breaking in this defense and being very vanilla and being able to hold stuff back. Whereas for, say, our offense, I don't doubt that there's entire pages of our playbook that we basically had set aside and said, we're not touching this until Oklahoma. We're going to work on this a little bit in practice every week. Going to make sure these packages are being executed at their highest possible level, but we're not pulling the curtain back on them until Oklahoma. Alex Grinch doesn't have that luxury at OU to this point. He is still in that phase of just trying to get his defense fully installed. So you can't be in that position where you're going, hey, there's this information that I need you to learn, but we're not going to use it right now. He's still at that point where every single practice needs to be focused on executing that defense, executing it as much as possible on any given week, putting your defense in those positions, testing your defense to find out exactly what you've got already. But because you don't have that luxury, it means, hopefully, that more of their defense is on film than our offense is on film. So if we throw wrinkles at them, they're going to have a harder time adjusting than if they try and throw a wrinkle at us, I would say.
Yeah, definitely a bit of an interesting chess match. I don't really know that we've held back, you know, taking out the left tackle screen against West Virginia. But at the same time, I actually, kind of going off that, I do think that Herman sometimes will install specific plays for games. Whether he's doing that for OU, I don't know. But like, there was one really nice series of like RPOs that he had against TCU last year that were really cool. And the big question for me, the big thing I was actually looking for, now I'm kind of wondering about after the West Virginia game, is if we're going to see any two back sets. Because we heard about it during the offseason that Whittington and Ingram were setting up some like two running back packages. But given all the injuries and the fact that, I mean, Rashawn Johnson was just trying to learn the basic plays, that hasn't really come to fruition. So I think it'll be interesting because we saw Devin Duvernay line up in a two-back set this last week against West Virginia, and we also saw him go in motion a couple times for like swing passes that could have led to a two-back set. So it was a second carry this year out of a two running back, or out of like 21 personnel. So I think it'll just be really interesting to wait and see if we're going to see any more of that this week.
Yeah, like you said, Devin Duvernay's had a couple carries straight out of the backfield on non-sweeps. So those wrinkles are slightly there. But yeah, I think, like you said, if there's ever a good day to unveil that. It's going to be against Oklahoma. I think as far as how we're going to attack Oklahoma, in addition to this possibly bringing out the two-back set, like we said, Colin Johnson is back, had big games. Both of the Oklahoma games last year had more than 200 yards at receiving, I think, in the Big 12 title game. Oklahoma has not had time.
Right?
Yeah, I think so. I think, yeah, the record for most yards or whatever receiving in a conference championship game. Oklahoma, even with Alex Grinch, even if he's doing a lot of good things, the fact of the matter is Alex Grinch did not have time to fix all of the problems in the secondary. And so many of their problems in the secondary are based on the type of player that they recruited. Their secondary guys are still undersized. A lot of guys who are 6 foot and under. So Colin Johnson, I expect, assuming he is truly, I mean, even if he's 80%, as he was for this big for the Big 12 title game last December, I expect he's going to be a force for against OU. We're either going to be throwing to him and just letting him just clown on the secondary again, or those OU defenders are going to have so much PTSD trying to stop him from burning them again that guys like Brennan Eagles, guys like Devin Duvernay, Jake Smith, I expect they're going to have a lot more freedom than they've had these past few weeks just because there's going to be so much attention on Colin Johnson.
Getting Colin back, it's massive. And it's not just because of like bullying them downfield and stuff, but it's felt a little bit to me that we've been playing almost with like one hand behind our back, playing Malcolm Epps and Marcus Washington at the X, because Colin just brings so much more. He's such a more complete player than those guys. Like even third downs, we're one of the best teams in the country. I think we're like third place right now in third down percentage. But Colin is really good on those like quick slants and then outs and stuff that we can throw to him on third down. So I really think it's a really big deal that he's going to be playing in this game.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one of those games where the portion of the fan base that likes to come out and shit on Colin Johnson any chance they can, they're going to figure out really quick how critical he is to this offense running at full capacity. Yeah, I mean, you can say Devin Duvernay is still playing well, Brennan Eagles is still playing well, but there's an entirely, like you said, one hand tied behind your back, so there's an entire another gear to this offense that can only really be accessed when you've got a weapon like Colin Johnson at the X position. So with all that, with having that talent back in Colin Johnson, being able to go Colin Johnson, Devin Duvernay, Brennan Eagles, get Jake Smith in there, get Cade Brewer involved, I fully expect that we're going to spread this secondary out. Like we said, the front seven seems to be a lot more improved. We're still going to want to run the ball because you just can't be unbalanced and expect to succeed in a high-scoring game like this. So I expect we're going to spread out the OU secondary and really force those players, like I said, with the athleticism deficiencies that they have, with the height deficiencies that they have, force them to play against the athletes that we have, and I would take our receivers over every single one of their secondary members 100% of the time.
Yeah, so I mean, I think everybody would. That's definitely a mismatch. Like, I don't want to say it's the biggest mismatch of the game, because like their wide receiver against our DBs might kind of be a contest as well, you know. But it's definitely something that for us is going to be the big thing to exploit. Just even, I mean, Devin Duvernay breaking tackles, Brennan Eagles can moss a guy whenever a couple times as well. And I think just the schematic disadvantage that Colin Johnson brings back to the table of the other team having to leave somebody over the top of him, because Epps has not presented that sort of threat. Whenever you talk about spreading them out, that's definitely going to come into play there in terms of getting a guy out of the box and allowing us to run the ball more effectively. Yeah, and then lastly, the big wrinkle, of course, is going to be Sam Cosmi at Wildcat.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about needing to rebuild our power run game for the quarterback. I can't think of a better way to rebuild it than to give Sam Cosmi the ball and tell OU's tiny little defenders to try and tackle an offensive lineman carrying the ball inside the five.
Mm-hmm. And then maybe we'll see him tab the little jump pass. Little Jordan Humphrey did it last year in the Cotton Bowl. And Dontari Poe, I think, did it a couple of years ago for the Chiefs as well. So you never know. Maybe he'll add another touchdown in an entirely new category to his stat line.
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point, Sam Cosmi should just be focused for the rest of his career on getting a touchdown in every possible way you can on offense. He's got the rushing touchdown. We got to find a way to get him a passing touchdown. And I think you're right. This is the game to do it with a jump pass. That would blow some minds. I would lose it in the stands. And then the time is going to come where we're going to make him an eligible receiver on like a trick play. And maybe it's like a fake field goal or something like that. Find him for a receiving touchdown. I think that is a reasonable goal. Just tell him you're not allowed to leave the University of Texas. You cannot go to the NFL until you have scored one rushing, one receiving, and one passing touchdown.
Well, so why are we stopping there? Let's just put him at DB until he gets pick six. I mean,
that's
we
not
going to
take
up.
Long. Did you see the athleticism this man displayed last Saturday? You put him at DB, that's just not going to be fair. I mean, he's going to pick six at every play.
Yeah, that's a true, what's it called? Field. I can't think of the term. But yeah, we might give up 70 points a game, but hey, it'll be worth it.
Absolutely. All right, so for the all-name team candidates, really the most critical part of this whole shindig that we do here, this whole podcast, really what I look forward to the most is going over the funny names on the rosters. So I'll start off. My favorite one that I found on here is going to be, I mean, a guy that we're all familiar with if you follow recruiting the past several years, a guy a lot of us had circled as top of our board for our wide receiver recruiting just because of his name alone, and that's going to be wide receiver Charleston Rambo. And that is going to be a name you're going to see a lot on Saturday. He is one of the weapons that Jalen Hurts likes to turn to. I believe he's effectively the number two receiver to or behind CeeDee Lamb. So Charleston Rambo, just an all-time great name. Absolutely a headliner for our end-of-the-year all-name team.
I'll pick up defensive lineman Zacchaeus McKinney. It's just a really cool spelling of, I mispronounced Zacchaeus, Z-A-C-C-H-A-E-U-S. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, and it has two C's in a row, so that's nice.
Feels very old-fashioned. For me, I got tight end Dane Saltarelli. So I that sounds like a walk-on kind of name. It's always that like sort of Italian-sounding name where he's just probably some walk-on who wears like number 33 or something like that.
And I think I'm going to finish up my picks with Starland Baldwin, Starrland. Haven't heard Starland before, but, you know, I like it. I'm a fan. Too bad he goes to Oklahoma, which is definitely not any sort of Starland.
No. The only way to be a star is to, like, create pure meth than Heisenberg could cook. That's how you get to be a star in Norman, Oklahoma.
Yeah, we'll just ignore the back-to-back Heismans.
Anyways. All right, now for the definitely not biased picks, the moment of truth. Do you want to go first on this one, Noah?
Yeah, you know, I'm holding true to my philosophy. I will always pick Texas in this game just because I always want us to win, basically. So I'm going with 48-41 Texas. Get a couple stops in the red zone. I think our offense will roll. And really, to me, this game is always going to be about surviving against OU. I think that their offense at some point is going to rip off three or four scores in a row. You know, they might score 17 straight. So it's just going to be a matter of being consistent on offense, avoiding three and outs, not having a period like we did against West Virginia where we punt and or turn the ball over on five straight drives and just keep chipping away and just surviving the surge that they're going to have at some point or a couple points.
I'm kind of in that same boat. We're not too far off on our score predictions. I got the same, pretty similar gap anyway. I'm going 38-30 Texas. Part of me, I really did have to think about it. Part of me wanted to pretend like I was going to be somewhat going with my, try and think hard about it, really be smart about this pick. But no, this is a Red River shootout. This is not a logical game. Sure, everyone is expecting and will probably almost definitely get a full-on shootout. So it's going to be high scoring, 60, 70, 80 points, not outside the realm of possibility. But I remember a previous episode where Tux talked about how whenever Todd Orlando played against Lincoln Riley's offense, it was basically a goal to hold them below 30 points. If you can keep them at or below 30 points, you should win every single game against Lincoln Riley's Oklahoma. I'm going to say that holds true here, going 38-30 Texas. And I'm going to say that our defense steps up, forces some turnovers from Jalen Hurts, holds him to less than 100 yards rushing, and he does not get in the end zone on the ground.
Yep. Okay, and then lastly, let's go ahead and move on to hot takes. I'll go ahead and let you do yours first.
Okay. So, as we all remember, Sam Ehlinger, when playing Oklahoma last year, basically just went absolutely wild. I think he had something like 5 total rushing touchdowns between the two games, 8 or 9 passing touchdowns. But in the shootout alone, he accounted for 394 yards of total offense, 8 yards receiving, 314 passing, and like, what was it, 76? I already lost track of my math. Rushing, and 5 total touchdowns, 3 on the ground, 2 passing. My hot take this week is going to be that he doesn't just exceed one of those stat categories, he exceeds all of them. He's going to account for more touchdowns and more total offense in this game than he did in the shootout last year. So I'm saying 400 yards and at least 5 touchdowns for Sam Ehlinger.
All right, and mine is going to be that Rashawn Johnson is leading rusher for the game. You know, we're coming into it with, I mean, they have so many guys on offense that are so good at running the football. They have, let's see, their 4th leading rusher is Kennedy Brooks, and he has 206 yards. Hurts has nearly 500. Trey Sermon has 345. Ramondre Stevenson has 319. But, you know, I think our run defense will step up and be able to hold them under their 7.8 yards per carry average. I'm not saying we're going to shut down the running game, but I think that whenever you combine the fact that we'll hold them a little bit, like we'll slow them down a little bit on the ground, create a couple negative runs, and then also they're splitting their yards between four guys, you know. I think if we could see Rashawn Johnson have another really nice game and come out with more than anybody else.
Well, that brings us to the end here. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at the FTH Podcast. And go ahead and take the time while you're on Twitter, go ahead and follow all of Hornscast at Hornscast. Make sure to follow or subscribe or whatever the Hornscast or whatever to the Hornscast channel on your favorite podcast platform, whether that's Spotify, Apple, Google, Overcast. What else is there? Anchor, I don't know. One of those, any of those, follow us there. We will see you next week to break down whatever happens in this shootout, hopefully getting nice and shitposty, bragging about another big win like we did after the Sugar Bowl last season. But until that time, hook 'em, and OU still sucks!